Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz interview series with the great Kansas City vibraphonist Peter Schlamm. He is originally from St. Louis, and he finally made his way to Kansas City and has literally became a fixture in the Kansas City jazz scene. As a young child, he started out on the piano, and from there, he made his way to the vibes. Before he stopped into Kansas City, he spent some quality time in New York City playing with cats like Logan Richardson. Over the course of our interview with Neon Jazz, he talked about everything happening today, how his past factored into his jazz journey today, and what the future may hold, along with some surprises here and there. Dig it, my friends.
And then I'm just going to go ahead and dive right in here and ask you, what has been going on with you lately?
Yeah, I have been staying pretty busy, playing a lot in Kansas City. So I would say, the last couple of months have been pretty busy, doing a lot of gigs on vibraphone and some on piano, and I've been traveling a bit too. I went to California for a week last month and played in Los Angeles with Ben Van Gilder. Next week I'm going to New York City, and I have two gigs up there. I'm going to be there for about a week.
Cool.
And I've also been doing some touring of the Midwest, primarily like Iowa, Wisconsin, and Missouri with my group. Which is sometimes trio or sometimes quartet format. So,
I did catch one of your songs on YouTube that was with your quartet in Iowa. That was a tasty track. I really liked it.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that's something, that I've kind of built up over the last few years, just trying to kind of create this little, circuit of about, a lot of times we'll do like between 4 and 6 performances, so it's usually inside a week, but it's fun to kind of get out and get to play different places.
Absolutely, and I have to tell you up front that at Neon Jazz, specifically me and my cohort, my engineer John, we love the vibes. It's my favorite thing. In fact, this week I'm going to do a full hour on Milt Jackson, so it's awesome. Near and dear to our heart.
Me too.
So let me go ahead, and speaking of the Midwest and traveling, let's geographically get to the alpha of your life. And you were born and raised in St. Louis. Talk to me about how being raised and born there kind of fostered an initial level of jazz love for you.
Well, I started playing jazz probably because I heard Lionel Hampton, and as soon as I heard him play Flying Home, it sounds like I'm making this story up, but I'm really not. I was in fifth grade. I heard Flying Home, and I was like, that's what I want to do.
Cool.
My dad is not a musician, but he's a big jazz lover. So, he was always playing records. And my older brother actually had just started playing jazz piano. He's about 3 years older. So I knew that, I knew that I wanted to play too. And I thought vibraphone would be really cool. I had some piano background. So, I figured it would be a fun instrument to play, and I could play along with my brother. And then as far as being in St. Louis, it was great. There were a few steady weekly gigs that kind of made up the scene in the early to mid 2000s when I was in high school and kind of developing there. P. Todd Williams was playing every Wednesday night at Riddles. And Dave Stone was playing every Friday night at Mondia, and Willie Akins was playing every Saturday night at Spruels. And I would go, starting about sophomore, junior year, I would go, hear those guys and sit in whenever I could. And then my senior year, I got into the band with Willie, so I got to kind of my first, real, heavy performing opportunities to do, like, a weekly gig. If you don't know Willie, he's kind of like a St. Louis legend, great tenor player, kind of been a staple of the scene for like 50 years there. So,
well, and that was what I was going to ask. I know you were part of his quartet at a very formative age. How important was that for your jazz development to be with him?
Probably the most important thing that happened to me when I was in St. Louis. I mean, without a doubt that, being in an experience, like, that experience was invaluable. I mean, basically, it was my first time being in a band, playing every week, playing with older musicians who had high expectations for how the music was going to go. And Willie would let me know, you know, if he wasn't happy with something and being in a situation where it's like, okay, it's not high school jazz band right now. Like, I have to, you know, it really, that was my first, you know, that was my first opportunity to really be in a situation like that. So I grew tremendously, you know, especially over the first few months and really the whole year I played with him. I think I was growing a lot the whole time. And that really set me up for being ready to go to New York when I went the next year.
Speaking of New York, was that a big culture shock for you to come from the Midwest, such a hotbed of not only culture but jazz activity and life?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a huge shock. It's a tough adjustment. I was really excited about being there, but it's, yeah, I mean, it's extremely different from the Midwest, just the whole pace and everything. Yeah, I mean, but it was exactly where I wanted to be, and so, you know, I was really happy to be there. But yeah, I would say it's one of those things you're constantly adjusting to it. But, you know, all the stimulation and just everything happening at once, all the people. But it's also, that's what makes it such a special place because there's just so much going on that it's an incredible place, you know, to get to study and learn. So, yeah, I mean, even though I would say, yeah, sometimes it was challenging and it was a big adjustment, I knew it was exactly where I wanted to be, so I was really happy to be there most of the time, you know.
Absolutely. So when you did get there, you jumped right in, started working with Stephon Harris, Aaron Parks, Ben Street, all those guys. Did you kind of, when you got there, immediately get baptized in a lot of action, or was it gradual? How did that happen? What were those gigs like in the early go?
Well, I didn't have too many gigs in the early going. I mean, Stephon was he was my teacher, so I got to study with him right away, which was a great experience. I mean, I'd been listening to his records since middle school, and I'd gotten to meet him once and take a lesson with him in high school. So, you know, getting to study with him completely changed things for me. He really, really helped my technique out tremendously. As soon as I got there, he pretty much helped me get my hands into a lot better place than they were in when I got there. So that made a huge impact the first 6 months I was there getting to study with him. And then as far as gigs, I mean, you know, I met a lot of the younger musicians at school. Like, I met Ben Van Gelder within my first week there, and we became great friends and played a lot. But I would say freshman year, I really didn't have too many gigs. And some of the other opportunities started coming up after I'd been there for a couple of years. I guess probably the next thing that I did was I got to do a recording with Dave Binney and Alan Ferber on this record called In the Paint, and that happened my sophomore year of college. And that was, you know, that was like a one-day recording session, but it was a great opportunity to get to do that with those guys. That was kind of my first, like, New York recording session, you know. So that just happened because I went in and heard Dave all the time and hung out with him and talked to him, and he was looking for vods. And, yeah, I mean, a lot of the opportunities just kind of come from, you know, connecting with people and meeting people and just kind of one link at a time, you know.
Yeah. Well, and then you started working with Logan Richardson and started playing at more places. What was it like when in your New York days when you hit a fever pitch? Was there a consistent, you know, 4 or 5 nights a week? You're running into people and things are popping. How did that happen?
Sorry, can you say the beginning of that again?
Well, and you played with Logan Richardson. You started really getting out there and getting into more venues. Was there a time where it was really consistent in New York on a regular basis you were out there doing it?
I mean, gigs are hard to come by in New York. Even a lot of the musicians that are making their living up there that are like the top professionals who we all know and listen to their records, I mean, a lot of those guys are not working consistently in New York. They're mostly paying their bills by touring in Europe and other places. So in New York, it's like, yeah, there were times when I had gigs, but it was never like, I certainly wasn't playing anywhere near every night. And like a lot of the clubs that, you know, that people play in are hard to get gigs at, you know? So it's certainly not something that, it's not like Kansas City where, you know, I'm working almost every night here. Out there, it's like I had great opportunities when I had them, but it wasn't, you know, as frequent. from a performance standpoint. But, you know, getting together with musicians, playing sessions, going out and hearing shows, I mean, that stuff is happening every night, you know.
Yeah. So speaking of Kansas City and getting into a consistent flow, when did you return to Kansas City?
Well, I moved here in, I guess, almost 2 years ago, in May 2013. So I moved back after I went to college from 2006 to 2010. Then I moved back to St. Louis. And I was in St. Louis for 3 years, and during that time, I would come out here quite a bit. Herman Mahari is one of my best friends, and so I would come out here. You know, we put a couple gigs together, and that was kind of right when a lot of stuff was picking up out here, and I started coming out here more and more, and eventually, you know, it made more sense to be based out here just because there's, at this point, a lot more opportunity for live jazz than there is in St. Louis. Like, out of those three gigs that I had mentioned earlier that were kind of the staple of the St. Louis scene, at this point, only Dave Stone on Friday night is happening. The other two places have closed, and, yeah, so it's like there's less stuff happening in St. Louis and more stuff in Kansas City, so I started getting pulled here and then ended up making the move about 2 years ago.
So speaking of Kansas City adding clubs and adding all kinds of action, talk to me about the scene. How do you feel the Kansas City scene is in 2015? Just give me your thoughts on what's going on.
I mean, I think it's extremely vibrant. I think there's I think the way that jazz is built into tourism, into kind of the infrastructure of Kansas City is really, you know, really important for making it sustainable. I think a lot of the venues really have the right approach of making, you know, great places that people want to hang out at, as well as featuring great music, you know, which is an important thing to do. And frankly, you know, it doesn't always work like that. And I think a lot of places here are doing it right. And yeah, I'm really happy to be here, be a part of it, you know.
What do you like best about Kansas City?
Well, I like a few things about it. I like the pace. I like the I love the community, the jazz community. I like and I mean, really, it's taken off a lot. Just, you know, with the addition of a couple more clubs, it's like at this point now, even on, you know, a Monday or Tuesday night, you have multiple places you can go, and so it's like, you know, having something like that makes all the difference, because, you know, somebody gets off a gig and you go hang out at the next person's place, and just, you know, having multiple things happening every night is really kind of what it takes to feel like, okay, we really have something going here, you know?
Absolutely.
That's what it's like in New York. It's like, you know, there's multiple venues, even on a Monday or Tuesday night, if you're walking around the village, you can go into Smalls and then 55 Bar and then pop into Fat Cat. You know what I mean? It's like being able to, like, and, you know, historically, it's like that's kind of what has cultivated themes or whatever you want to say, you know, like having multiple places and multiple, you know, multiple things happening.
Absolutely. So other than obviously Lionel Hampton being such a force to bring you into wanting to be a jazz musician at a very young age, who else would you consider jazz heroes that you look up to?
Coleman Hawkins. For sure. Coltrane, Ahmad Jamal, Art Tatum. Yeah, I mean, I could keep going. I don't know.
Right. No,
but
that's
yeah,
cool.
Those guys all are, yeah, that's a pretty significant group right there.
Absolutely. Let's thin the herd a little bit, and I'm going to come up with kind of a metaphor we use around here, which is the Jazz DeLorean. And if you could go back in time and either catch a gig or catch a musician, anyone at any time, who would it be, why, and what would you want to talk to them about?
So what are the qualifications again? So do I get to talk to everybody in the band? Or just one person? Or do I just get to hear the gig? I have to know all these details because they're going to...
Either way, it could be I talked to the Hot Sardines last week, and they threw a juggernaut in this question and said, it's not the musician, it's actually a gig that I would like to see. So whether it was Sinatra or someone like that. So I'm kind of adding an element to it. The originally is a musician. Who would you like to meet? What would you talk to them about? But if you want to go with the gig route, you know, what gig would it be?
All right, I'll go that route. So, yeah, so I would probably go and see, like, Monk's Quartet live at the Five Spot when Coltrane was in the group and Roy Haynes is, like, I love that recording, and I love all those musicians, and so that would be a pretty ideal situation to get to see all of them in the same place.
Wow. Yeah, the visual I have is pretty cool.
Nice. Yeah, so that's my choice for now. There's no wrong choice, I guess, but I'll go with that.
No, that's a great choice. Peter, tell me, what's the greatest thing about waking up every day?
Greatest thing about waking up every day? As me, or just in general, in life?
Well, yeah, for you, when you wake up, what do you think about? Like, man, this is great.
I mean, just the fact that right now I am able to really just be a musician full time, and just feeling, you know, thankful for that there's the opportunities here to where, you know, I can really spend my day working on music, listening to music, then having opportunities to, you know, to play most nights and just really hone the craft here. It's, so usually when I wake up, I'm just pretty happy to be alive.
Right on.
And getting to be a musician. I mean, you know, there's a lot of great musicians in a lot of places that really, you know, the opportunity and the economics don't work out to where they can, you know, spend their days not working, you know, like working on music and not having some sort of other job. And it's, you know, I feel lucky to be in a life situation and in a city, in a place that supports that right now, you know.
Right on. What's next for you? Do you got any albums you want to get out? Any other trips other than L.A. and New York? Anything kind of on the horizon for you?
Well, I mean, I'm still very much kind of getting the word out and pushing my album that I recorded last year called Tinks, which I'm really happy with. And that honestly is, I'm probably going to, you know, that's going to be it as far as recording for a while. I'm involved in some other projects as a sideman, but it's like that, that features a lot of my songs. I spent over a year doing the recording and mixing, so I kind of got it just the way I want it. And at this point, I'm still kind of trying to get that out into the world, you know. I mean, I'm just trying to stay busy. I mean, like, I have many trips planned up to the city. Gonna try and do like a CD release show there in the summer, and I'm gonna try and do another tour with my trio in the early fall, back out to the West Coast. We did that last year, which was really fun, and kind of keep these Midwest runs going. So for me, it's like I think I'm happiest when I have a balance between, you know, getting to be in Kansas City and playing every night and being here, and then also being on the road, getting to, like, you know, meet people and see new places and kind of bring the music to other places. So I try and keep a busy schedule and kind of balance those two things, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. What's the last vinyl jazz album you listened to multiple times? The last vinyl jazz album you listened to multiple times.
Oh, there's many of them, but I have all the classic Ahmad Jamal Trio albums on vinyl. So the ones I probably listen to most are the Live at the Pershing. I have Monk's Dream on vinyl. I listen to that all the time. Let's see. I have a bunch of 70s McCoy. I have Trident. That's one of my favorite ones. I love listening to records.
Right on. Let me ask you this. What if you had to define who you are in the length of a tweet, 144 characters, basically a sentence and a half, tell me who you are.
I think that's what Tinder's for, right? No.
Yeah.
No. now I got to start counting characters.
Now you can fudge on this. You're totally fine fudging.
I'm a musician, twin, Sorry, you're stumping me with this. I got to think for a second.
That's fine. You're good.
I'm someone who loves sharing experiences with other people, making music with other people, being open and exploring just music and life. I try and bring positive energy into the world, and I really value people that do the same thing. Yeah, I'm just trying to grow both personally and musically and be happy. Yeah, I don't know.
Perfect, perfect. Final question. Tell me why the vibraphone is so cool.
Oh, that's a great question, because it is the coolest instrument. It's cool because it's like drums and piano combined. You know, it's like if they had a child, that child would be the vibraphone. So you have the perfect balance of like having the percussive attack, you know, and then also having the melodic. You know, it's the perfect combination of being able to articulate rhythm and melody, you know. And just the vehicle that it gives you for doing that is pretty special, I think. And just the way it sounds is cool.
It's like the jazz political candidate that can unite the people.
Exactly. I love the vibraphone.
Yeah, so do I, definitely. Hey, Peter, it was great talking with you. I appreciate you giving me a little bit of your time.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm happy to be a part of it. Yeah, thanks so much for taking the time to interview me. I appreciate it.
You bet, man. Take it easy.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to yet another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players in New York, Kansas City, and spots all over America, giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to the cool and wise Peter Schlamm for his time and dedication to Kansas City jazz. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino on the iTunes Store, or you can always visit theneonjazz.blogspot.com for all things Neon Jazz. Until next time, enjoy the music, my friends.
Neon Jazz.